WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
This conversation will include references to suicide and substance abuse. Now, if you or someone you know is struggling with their mental health, the National Suicide and Crisis Hotline number to call or text is 988. That number is available 24/7 with service in English and Spanish. Or you can also call the NAMI Chicago helpline at 833-636-4244. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Eighteen detainees died in custody at Cook County Jail in 2023. That is the deadliest year in decades, according to an investigation from Injustice Watch. One detainee, Daniel Colon, died less than 24 hours after being in custody. Public records show that he was sick from opioid withdrawal symptoms and that jail staff failed to follow protocol and check in on him. And he's not the only one. I sat down with Injustice Watch reporter Carlos Ballesteros to discuss his year-long investigation into what's happening at the county jail. When he was reporting this story, Carlos says that he was the one to tell Daniel Colon's family how he died. So I asked him, why weren't they informed before? Here's Carlos.
According to state law, anytime someone dies in custody, it is the responsibility of that law enforcement agency to not only inform state regulators of the details of those deaths, but also to keep the families of the deceased updated about any internal investigations into those deaths. And what we found after speaking not only with the Colon family, but with five other families, is that Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart's office is not doing that. Families were left scrambling to look for answers as to what happened to their loved ones in his custody. And even when they attempted to get some answers by filing their own public records request, It was often a very cumbersome process that even for a reporter like me, who's paid to do this kind of stuff, gets very complicated very easily.
Yeah. So left you telling them what happened.
Yeah. So we were able to obtain a bunch of documents for each of these deaths. And something that we wanted to do with this story is not keep that information to ourselves and reach as many families as we could. And so, you know, in March, I was able to meet with Daniel's sister, his aunt, his grandpa, and shared with them what I had found about his death.
Yeah, he was arrested while experiencing symptoms of opioid withdrawal, and the jail medical team noted that he was a daily heroin user. What are the protocols when it comes to staff checking in detainees?
So according to the policies at the jail, there is a legal requirement that's embedded in state law that mandates staff checking in with visually checking people at least every 30 minutes. Now, that requirement becomes even more important in what's known as specialty units at the jail, which are maximum security and also the kind of like the healthcare hospital divisions, which is where Daniel was.
Is there medical care that the jail is supposed to provide?
Totally, yeah. I mean, there's a full running hospital at the jail. It's run through Cook County Health. And so Daniel was in a part of the jail known as the residential treatment unit, which is where you go when you have substance abuse issues and other mental health issues as well. And that part of the jail is supposed to be not only supervised by correctional officers, but also medical staff. And what ended up happening in Daniel's case was unfortunately that overnight, as he was experiencing his withdrawal symptoms, he was in the bathroom and staff said that they checked in on him sporadically over the next 7 hours between midnight and 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. But by the time 7 a.m. hit, he collapsed onto the bathroom floor and he lay there for more than half an hour until another detainee comes in and alerts a staff member that he's on the floor. And by the time medical staff reach him, it's too late and he's already dead.
Wow. I want to dig more into what is supposed to happen and what is actually happening. So your article includes body camera footage as well as other public records that shows details of these deaths, right? Not just Daniel's, but the others as well. So talk more about what they're supposed to show you and what you actually were able to see.
So, you know, getting records for the story was, you know, a very time-consuming process. We requested records from four different agencies that kind of have their eyes on deaths in custody at the jail. And we weren't able to obtain any footage of Daniel's death or any other death. But what we were able to obtain are these very detailed records from the state police, which investigate most of the deaths in the jail. Mm-hmm. And those include reviews of video footage that state police investigators do with timestamps that are very detailed. And so combining those with other records, we were able to see the lapses in supervision and medical care that led up to these deaths. Aside from Daniel, there are other deaths where people were either dead or in a medical emergency for more than an hour before anyone realized, which again, people are supposed to be visually supervised and checked at least every 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so you had people who were definitely in need for longer than that were not seen. And you also had, there's one instance in which, for example, there was a 26-year-old man who was in custody for about 6 years. He was pretrial in custody at the jail. He was facing some pretty serious charges. But in that time, his mother told us that every day or almost every day, he complained to her about these severe headaches, especially over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And he ended up dying from an overdose, which accounted for most of the deaths at the jail last year, or a majority of the deaths, rather. But when the Cook County Medical Examiner performed an autopsy on his body, they found a 2-inch thick brain tumor that had gone undetected for throughout his entire stay at the jail. So there are these lapses that were very clear once we dug into the records.
And as you mentioned there, Carlos, drug overdose, it was the leading cause of death when you combed through that list. Tell us more about how drug-soaked paper was getting into the jail.
Yeah, so the drug-soaked paper has been in the news quite a bit over the last year.
Fentanyl, right?
Yeah, it's paper laced with fentanyl, other drugs too, like synthetic cannabis. It was really scary last year as this kind of paper was making its way into the jail through the mail system. And then about a year ago, Sheriff Dart kind of laid down the hammer and restricted access to paper at the jail in order to kind of curb these overdoses, which he did. Overdoses are down at the jail, and the jail hasn't seen a death since Christmas. Mm-hmm. But even in those overdose deaths, there were lapses in supervision and medical care that we were able to identify in the records.
Death by suicide and homicide is also at play here. What's going on, and how is the understaffing at the jail possibly contributing to that?
The question about staffing is really interesting to us because the jail population has been decreasing rapidly over the last few years, particularly since the abolition of cash bail late last year. You know, right now, like last year, there was an average like about 5,300 people at the jail every day. Right now, that average sits at about 4,700, 4,800. And it just keeps, and it's been going down since. And the staffing level of correctional officers seems pretty stable from what we can tell from the records. It's something that we're exploring in potential further reporting and, you know, articles that are kind of come out in this project of ours, because it was an open question to us as to why there were these lapses in supervision given that the jail population was decreasing. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, it's a question that we're still trying to answer.
A jail spokesperson says that Sheriff Tom Dart has done everything he can to ensure safety. What else can you tell us, Carlos, about how the sheriff describes his actions to keep inmates safe?
Yeah, I mean, it's important for me to note that Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart did not agree to speak to us directly. He declined several interview requests. And this is a man who's run the jail for close to 2 decades and is an elected official. But he chose to speak through us only through spokespeople. And what his spokesperson told us is that no one is hiding anything, and that they've solved the issue with overdoses, and that the drug-laced paper accounted for, was the primary driver, is how they describe it, of the record-setting number of deaths. But, you know, one thing that became very clear to us is that not only is the sheriff not providing families of the deceased with these updates as to what happened to their loved ones in custody, but they're also withholding very important details of these deaths from state regulators. So under the law, anytime someone dies in custody, you have to submit this report to the Illinois Department of Corrections and their Jail and Detention Standards Unit, which gets all of these reports from all 96 county jails across the state. And according to the law, in those reports, you're supposed to include the circumstances leading up to these deaths. This is the only reporting requirement that Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart has to do when it comes to deaths in his custody. Mm-hmm. And we obtain those reports that he submits to the state, and they're basically empty. They only include people's time of death. They have a lot of portions of the report that say pending, information coming. But we know from other records that they had the information to fill out those reports within a day of people dying. So it leaves. And so when we asked, you know, why are these reports empty? What we heard back was nobody's hiding anything.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
So are there any effective solutions the jail could implement, in your view, after everything you've seen and heard?
Yeah, so when we talked to experts in corrections oversight, just oversight over jails and prisons, and we quote one of them from the University of Texas at Austin, Michelle Deitch. She's the head of the Jail and Prisons Innovation Lab. And, you know, she knows every kind of like the details of all these different type of models across the country when it comes to oversight.
Yeah.
And what she said was that it was very clear that really there is no oversight of Cook County Jail. You know, Cook County Jail was under a federal consent decree for a long time that was lifted in 2017. Mm-hmm. But after that, there really isn't any other oversight except for those reports that are supposed to go to the state, which are empty.
Yeah.
So she, you know, she's an advocate for kind of independent bodies and independent oversight bodies that exist outside of the sheriff's office.
Yeah.
Whose sole mission is to oversee.
Consistently.
Right, to monitor.
Yeah.
These places. And that's what she said is needed here.
I mean, is the goal here to have zero deaths while in custody?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think the way she phrased it to me was people shouldn't be dying in jail. And that anytime someone dies in jail, it should be a big deal and it should be looked into. And we should figure out what are the patterns that lead up to this death? What are the circumstances that led up to it? And without a proper reporting requirement, you know, to report these circumstances to state regulators, to families, to the public, without anybody really looking into what's going on, these kind of things can very easily fall under the radar. Which I think is what happened here, you know? I mean, there wasn't any talk of a record-setting number of deaths at the jail last year.
Right.
Until we started pulling these things together and looking at the numbers from other years. And then, you know, we were like, wow.
Yeah. Well, folks, check out Carlos's investigation. It's online. Carlos Ballesteros is an Injustice Watch reporter. We appreciate you being here with us.
Of course. Thank you very much.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Nadia Hernandez, edited by Linnea Dominic, and mixed by Max Lubers. Remember, you could call or text 988 to reach the National Suicide and Crisis Hotline number. That number is available 24/7 with service in English and Spanish. You can also call the NAMI Chicago Helpline at 833-636-4244. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk again this afternoon.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely